LA Times had an editorial where they called it three droughts. One of the droughts is we have no rain. The second drought is there's no snow in the Sierras where we get half of our water down through the California Canal. The third drought is in Colorado. The source water supplies to go into the Colorado River where we get our other half of our water. So it's like a perfect storm from a water supply standpoint.
We could have some of our snow.
Yeah, just how do I get the water from your snow to Southern California?
Yeah, we've been clobbered this winter.
Don't worry about that, Dwayne. The big oil companies are figuring out a way to deliver water instead of oil, so you'll know.
That's scary.
No doubt about it. Part of their whole fracking is designed, in my view, is designed to ruin the water supply so they can then sell us our water.
Yeah.
There I go again, conspiracy theorist.
Yep.
Well, the reality is that the whole thing speaks for itself, regardless of theory.
Yeah. Yeah. You just look at it and say, whoa, there it is. I mean, when you can light your faucet water on
your house in a water faucet. Yeah.
So the earth will be making more statements pretty soon, I'm afraid. Stop doing that. Here's a tsunami. Another one. And I think that drought is just sort of part of the ebb and flow of how nature reacts. So are we going to get going here, Ken, or what are we going to do? Are you still here, Ken? Or do we lose him?
It sounds like somebody dropped off.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's probably calling up Craig or somebody else to see if he can get him up here. Mm-hmm. I did listen to the whole teleconference with Max on No Lies Radio, and it was just too bad that we had so much distorted communication. I know I had to, I slowed down my speaking and stood back from the phone, and I was trying to do anything to make it all work. Sounded like I was drunk.
There's a lot of distortion there.
This is Ken. I just ducked out and tried to call Craig, but he's not answering his phone, so I don't know what's up with him. He may have gotten detained or delayed or something like that, so I guess we just need to go ahead and get started. We don't have a lot on the agenda tonight, so... Maybe we can get through quick and get out of here early for a change, but I appreciate you all being here. So, just for the record, on the call is Dwayne Dietz, Paul Zaremka, Ned Delaney, who am I missing? And one other person.
I think it's just Robin. Yourself. I think it's only
Robin.
Me, Robin.
Robin Horton.
Yeah.
I thought I said Robin Horton. Dwayne Dietz, Robert Horton, Ned Delaney, Paul Zaremka, and myself, Ken Freeland. Okay.
Well, I guess you can probably start, Ken, or you are recording, right? Hello?
Ken? Did we lose Ken again?
I think we might have. Well, maybe somebody called him back.
Yeah, I'll bet he got a call.
Well, he's steering the ship, so we might as well just paddle around in circles till he gets here.
Well, when we get to announcements, I have some information about Kevin Ryan. I know that he was discussed about being included in a teleconference or a special interactive call, and I'm going to participate with him in a panel discussion down in Indianapolis here in a week from Monday. So maybe I can talk to him then.
Will we be broadcasting that somehow or recording it somehow? Because I'm very interested in all that.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's pretty good at that.
It's sponsored by the Sociology Club down at IUPUI. I don't have any other details at the moment.
Well, that's interesting. Can you flush out that Sociology Club? That's very interesting.
Well, yeah, the former dean's a friend of mine. That's the way I got had inroads. The focus will be on the Zuberi documentary, the academic community.
I got you.
That was the focus, and that was the inroad. We'll just have to go see where we go from there. Without that, I don't think we could have gotten in.
This is Ken. Can you guys hear me yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on before, but you guys were talking, but you couldn't hear me, and so I guess I had to hang up and start over again. I don't know what was up with that. Well, let's make sure that we still got the recording going here. I think so. Yeah, I think so. Okay, so 9/11 Truth teleconference for 129-2014. President Paul Zaremka, Dwayne Dietz, Ed Delaney, Robert Horton, and Kent Freeland. Any objections to approving the minutes from the previous teleconference?
No objection.
The minutes are approved as circulated, and we'll move on to tonight's draft agenda. Anybody, any additions or deletions from the draft agenda? Yeah, hearing none, I guess we'll just proceed with that. Since Barbara's not here, we can't do her issue. So we will just go to the other issue, which was, Dwayne's request for a review of 911truth.org. That's an open discussion. So Dwayne, you want to introduce that and we'll discuss it?
I threw that out as a candidate topic, and I guess I got taken up on it. It seemed to me like that is I don't visit that website very often, and I didn't know whether other people do or not, but I thought it was worth talking about. And so the points that I'll make on it is it's one of the oldest 9/11 truth organizations, started in 2002. The website itself is nicely laid out, but it's got some stealthy features. For example, it's hard to figure out who the editors and board members are. They don't actually come out and say. A couple of times they'll have statements like, current and former board members like David Kubiak and Les Jamieson. So when they couch it in that terms, you can't tell whether they are former board members or current ones. So they're just kind of hard to pin down from that standpoint. I noted that they are connected mostly with the Journal of 9/11 Studies. And the way you can realize that if you look at the menu item, or it's an icon there on their homepage that says evidence. You click on that, you basically come up with Journal for 9/11 Studies. So there's no suggestion that there are other organizations doing research. It's just whatever is in general in 9/11 Studies. The website has no forums or means of making online comments. And therefore, you don't have something equivalent to the banning of individuals. Like 9/11 Blogger bans people. It brings up positions that they don't agree with, which makes it, let's say, more on our minds because we have people that we respect their research that get banned on Blogger, but that doesn't happen on this website because of that, I think. They have sponsored or co-sponsored several conferences over the years, the first one beginning in 2003, so they're active more than just via the website, and they have a number of grassroots groups, basically local groups, and I don't know how many, how active these groups are. It just indicates that they're there. I think that I would call it a slanted editorial policy, which they call reliable. That's their way of describing what they present. But I'll just point out one recent article. It was earlier this month. That the article title is "Disinformation Killed 9/11 Truth," written by Joe Giambroni. And I'll just give you one excerpt out of it to give you an idea. It says, the claim that a missile destroyed the Pentagon lives on. Probably the first major 9/11 disinformation coup, and it has long been cited by international corporate media as a sure indicator of mental illness and stupidity. You can point at 42 Pentagon witnesses who saw a plane, noting that zero eyewitnesses ever reported a missile, but in self-reinforcing religious mindwash, contrary evidence is handily dismissed. So that's just that's picking on one thing, but it's got quite a list of topics that it basically will not report on, other in that fashion, in a negative sense. So anyway, I just that's my quick take on what I see on the website, and I'm curious whether other people find it a valuable resource. Over.
This is Ned Delaney.
Okay, Ned, and then anybody else? Because Paul? I'd like to say something too. Okay, Ned, Paul, then myself. Go ahead. Ned.
And Robin on the end of that, Ken.
Okay, the format on this website has been changed from when I was last on. I am not on it. I don't get on it myself on a consistent daily basis, but the last time I was on it, the logo up top is fairly consistent except for the RSS off to the right. The rest of it is totally new, so I don't know who has changed the website and whatnot. The disinformation killed 9/11, yeah, I've not seen that, and that probably needs to be addressed. The grassroots organization is what I basically have been affiliated with over the years, and that was originally organized and sponsored. Well, it was monitored by Janice Matthews, as I understood, up until about 2006, and there was a gap between 2006 and 2008, particularly after 2008. The wind seemed to go out of the sails of a lot of the grassroots organizations. There was a strong buildup and support for Obama's agenda and statements that he would call for and and acknowledge an independent investigation into 9/11. And then, of course, within a matter of days after being elected, it became quite obvious that everybody had been snookered, and we elected somebody else. It's kind of curious as to where who's monitoring the website this way. It was my understanding that the address was still under Janice Matthews' name, but from what I'm seeing here, I'm not sure. So I don't have any further update on that. So I think your points are relevant, considering what's showing up here, and the fact that everything that's here appears to be within the last couple of months, and the format is totally different from what was here before the first year. Anyway, that's all I have. My initial thoughts.
Okay, thanks, Ned. Paul.
Yeah, Duane, well, first of all, I hadn't looked at this this article you cited by Joe, whatever how you pronounce his last name. And it actually gets worse. The very last paragraph is really really goes over the top. He says, trying to argue sense with a 9/11 clown posse has proved illusory at best. Most don't like it when they are shown to be an error, and blah, blah, blah. It goes on. It's a pretty strong statement. But anyway, you said, Duane, that they're tied to which organization, which journal? I don't see that. When I look at evidence and research, I don't see them tied to anything.
Oh, well, they don't come out with it until you click on the evidence icon along the left-hand side.
Wait a minute. There's an evidence and at the top, there's evidence and research. Is there a different one you're talking about?
Hold on. I've got to go look at it here. I'm not. So there's a. If you look on the left of the home page,
right.
There's a. A thing called evidence. It's kind of an icon. It looks like a evidence going into a shredder, I guess. If you click on that,
I don't have that. I don't see it.
Oh, you don't?
No. I see browse by category, browse by tag, view recent articles, 9/11 foreknowledge, unanswered questions. Oh yeah, I see. Oh, I'm sorry. I see it now. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, now I'll click on it and see what I get. Okay, it goes two articles in 2012. Okay, now where are you?
Two okay. Articles. Okay. Well, maybe I judged it too harshly, because the first thing I picked up was just taking me to the website of the Journal of 9/11 Studies.
Right. It just says I think it just says that Kevin Ryan and Graham McQueen are pleased to announce a 2-year, you know, blah, 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 you know, whatever. I don't think that's
okay.
That didn't tell you all that much.
I went down, I made a judgment too fast. I should have looked what else is under that.
Okay. That's all I have. To tell you the truth, I haven't looked at it very often, except when something, you know, somehow it's called to my attention. I don't regularly look at it, so I really don't have a whole lot to contribute. I did like it about 4 or 5 years ago when I was looking at it longer, I mean more frequently, but I just haven't done it very much recently.
Okay.
Just like you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is Ken. I had some questions about that perhaps Ned could answer about the relationship between this website and 9/11 grassroots. I had always assumed they were kind of dovetailed organizations, but maybe I'm wrong. It seemed to me that this was kind of the hub website which 9/11 grassroots was kind of operating. Is that mistaken, Ed?
Well, that's pretty much my understanding initially as to how it all worked. I mean, grassroots was kind of fell under or within the umbrella of 9/11 Truth, this website. And, you know, my original link to 9/11 was through Janice Matthews and grassroots organizations. And you had communities and state organizations all over the country at the time. And then we had a monthly teleconference, pretty much like what we're doing right now,
right,
where representatives of the different groups would log in, and then we would simply discuss strategies and events that would be taking place within the various states.
Right. I was part of that toward the end, and I've sorely missed it, and I thought Janice did an outstanding job of organizing that, but have you heard anything from her lately? I mean, you know, is she still around at all, or?
Not lately. It's my understanding that the website, the former 9/11 Truth website, the domain was still assigned to her. But it appears that something has changed because, like I say, this entire format is entirely new since the first year.
That James isn't on the call tonight because he could probably provide some authoritative answers to some of these questions.
But I've not heard anything from Janice recently since the first year.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you bringing this subject up because when I went on it, you know, I went back to the local grassroots organizations or local organizations because it still serves as kind of a outreach tool. And my name was there, but for our group, but there was also a website that's defunct, and so I had to contact James, and he said he would take care of that. So I'm still assuming that, you know, 9/11 grassroots has control over the website. But James didn't apply anything else. He said, yeah, he could take care of that for me. So, Robin?
Yeah, I just want to give some background. I had a chance to chat with Janice Santa Cruz of 2007, 2008, a while ago, because I was very interested and found out that she was an original peace activist from the 60s and the 70s, and saw the events on 9/11 as a replacement or an update of the peace community for this decade, and was very frustrated and discouraged that the 9/11 Truth community was just wholeheartedly dismissed by the peace community, which is by design, and I have solid reasons to explain how that happened and how it continues to happen. So I did sense that she at one time was very discouraged and running out of money and effort and time. So I don't know who's running it right now, but I do review 9/11truth.org upon occasion. And I view it as something that's still positive, and it is somewhere in between the consensus 9/11, which is very restrictive in what it supports and presents, which is fine by me. I think that's excellent. And some of the people who are organizations who are still, in my view, a little bit farther out there working on their own working hypotheses that are less based on information and more based on their hypotheses, which I also feel is absolutely fine. That's we simply don't have enough information yet to be as hardly defined or firmly defined as we will be someday. So I consider it to be really basically a fairly neutral electronic library about 9/11 Truth. And I think because it is undermanned, whomever is still running it or whatever, simply doesn't have the time to keep you know, moderating a blog and doing this, that, and the other thing. So I understand why it's been designed to be more library and less conversational, which is acceptable again to me. I think it's a positive asset in our movement. And I am one who has been banned by Blogger for still ridiculous reasons. And although like and read that a lot, I like to have dialogue and read what people are saying back and forth. So that's the good side to 9/11 Blogger. The bad side is that it is filtering way too much stuff out. So really, that's all I've got to say. I will say something critical. I think that Janice's boyfriend back in the beginning, I'm just guessing names here, just my memory's not good, but I think it was Philip Berg. And in any event, I think there was a big effort throughout the movement on the early part to make sure that we separated any role that Israel may have had to play in the 9/11 events and just get them off the radar. And I definitely sensed that that was happening at 911truth.org from the beginning. And I'm going to guess that if you go through all of its inventory over the years, you will be able to find out that in fact, any references to Israel and Mossad has been scrubbed. So that's all I've really got to say.
In exception to what you said, Robin, would you agree that the article read earlier by, or cited earlier by Ned, I'm sorry, by Dwayne, was off character for the description you've been giving of a generally neutral website, or no?
I would say that it is a little bit off and subject of disinformation itself. But I really believe, because I've kind of read part of it and am doing so now, disinformation is something that we have to deal with in this community, and the best way to do it is just to open it up to the sunlight and to have people who make such broad claims, you know, in some ways allow them to do that, because I think that the more reasoned people will take a look at and look at it and say, well, this guy's a disinformation agent himself.
Could I ask if anybody on the call does not share that assessment of the article that was cited by Dwayne?
I'm sorry, would you say that again, Ken?
I'm sorry?
Would you repeat that? I'm not sure.
Right. I'm trying to see if we have a consensus on this call that one particular article that was cited by Dwayne is uncharacteristic of the site, that otherwise seems to hold itself fairly neutral in terms of controversy, and seems to be more of a neutral hub kind of arrangement, and seems to call for a measure of or a response of some concern about that particular article.
Yeah, I agree.
I haven't watched it enough to know. This is Paul.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here right now.
If we could maybe register a concern and convey it to James, who I think is still somebody who has some degree of authority with respect to that website, and ask him to take a look at that and see whether or not it serves the purposes to which the website is dedicated or not.
Yep. This is Ned.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, James Hufford is actually, I mean, he kind of came on board after Janice left, when as far as the grassroots are concerned. So he's basically officially listed as the coordinator, but we don't, you know, people that are affiliated with the group don't actually meet and get together on a teleconference call and this sort of thing. That's something I kind of brought to his attention a while back, and then I was wanting to go back through the list because we have a lot of names and email addresses that are totally off the grid now.
Yeah.
And need to be updated, and I attempted to make, and I had authorization to contact these people to kind of see where we stood as far as activities and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was an extremely small percent people listed even that even responded. But with regard to this article, I think it's totally off base. And one other comment in reference to the peace movement, my own experience, particularly here in Lafayette and over Purdue, is that, you bring up 9/11 and you immediately get the doors closed on you. Now, our 9/11 truth or peace movement in West Lafayette has a strong Jewish leaning. Now, these people are supposedly activists, but for some reason, you mentioned 9/11, and everything just goes cold. So anyway, that's...
Yeah, Robin, I'm going to stack after that.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I've mentioned it to this. Both myself and Christopher Bolin have mentioned this relationship between the peace community and the 9/11 truth community before. And my historical reading, and Christopher Bolin had a personal experience out in southwestern California where he saw that the peace communities were likewise infiltrated by the Jewish communities, and there is a reason for that. And this is my little bit of research and my conclusion. The peace community was structured years and years ago to deal with Vietnam and sort of had some wins and whatever, but then it became to be fractured and splintered off into several different type of competitive groups that served to undermine each other, and one of the competitive groups was basically, well, we do want to discuss Palestine and Israel, and the other group did not want to discuss Palestine and Israel. And so, therefore, I see a direct parallel between the diminishment of the original peace movements 40 or 50 years ago into basically non-existence right now by the Jewish community, who does not want any peace community to be putting their nose into Israel-Palestine, which any sound and legitimate peace activist would do, because peace is peace in this country and all the way around the world. So I see an absolute direct parallel between that and the Jewish American community being extremely concerned about any suitable, credible research into 9/11, especially when it surrounds the Dancing Israeli story and any of the work that Christopher Bolin does. It's not a mistake that Bolin has been he's just had a really rough road run at him. They need to keep that information very quiet. So to me, it's the same process and the same group of people that undermine the peace communities in this country, okay, and have undermined and infiltrated the 9/11 truth communities in this country, and that is why I mentioned what I did earlier with Janice Matthews and I think her former boyfriend. And so she was stuck at that time. I didn't address her boyfriend or that issue, but I just understood where she was frustrated at the peace community and had the very same frustration with the boundaries between the peace community and the 9/11 truth community. She scratched her head because she, like me and like many of us, feel that they should be brothers and sisters. They're basically twins. 9/11 truth is a peace movement, period. Okay, but because it exposes Israel and the Mossad and Zionism and the you know everything else that's coming out right now, I just feel that I just feel that that's kind of what the case is. And if you read towards the bottom of this article that we are referencing, they do talk about the Dancing Israelis and this, that, and the other thing, and then you wrap it up with, you know, concepts of saying, well, you know, if some of this is the truth, well, you know, we have so much more research that has to be done before we can have really solid quotes, yeah, well, this is the truth situation about it. I mean, the best that we have is what the architects and engineers have done, and frankly, that's about it. We're just continuing research, assembling information. Ryan's another 19. Is it just another step ahead of collecting information? Max's DVD series is another output that I feel asks more questions than it answers. I do not agree with Elizabeth Woodworth that that DVD as it sits right now will be on library shelves. We have so much more work to do on quite a few elements of that DVD. So
all on the stack.
That's about where I feel. That's just where I am. I operate that way because I get the exact same reaction in the peace communities around here in Seattle. I saw Zionists here undermine the 9/11 Truth Committee. I was in meetings. I saw it. It was Jewish Americans who did this, and the Seattle area has pretty much reacted the same way. Not me, but the peace communities out this way.
Paul, but before that, I'd like to ask you two clarifying questions that Paul has in mind.
Okay.
The first one has to do with the Janice's boyfriend. I mean, that was mentioned earlier, but I don't quite grasp the significance of that. Was there a political issue there? Or
I think it was Jewish.
He was Jewish. Ah, I see. Okay. The second one is, this is a question for you, Rob, but, I mean, you seem to be suggesting that there was an orchestrated attempt by these forces to infiltrate and undermine the peace
yes.
communities. Has anybody ever written anything to that effect? I mean, on that particular subject?
I don't know. I can't answer that. All I know is that when I was in Reno, Nevada, and was coming up with my civil informationing efforts, there was a peace coalition called the Reno Anti-War Coalition, and it was designed to bring together all of the area churches and peace groups and whatever, and two of the primary peace groups, one was United for Peace and Justice, and there was another one I can't quite remember right now, maybe ANSWER or something. And there was a constant battle, and the battle was always defined exactly that we don't want to talk about Palestine. Or
well,
we do want to talk about Palestine.
Let me tell you from my own hardcore personal experience that United for Peace and Justice is definitely a Zionist-controlled outfit, okay?
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that, okay? Let's go ahead and let Paul have a turn, and then we can continue. Go ahead.
Robin, I object strongly to your continued reference to Jew. If I said black, or you were talking about blacks, and you were talking about Latinos or Hispanics or Christians or Muslims or whatever else, you wouldn't put them all in a single box, in a single category. I have family who's Jewish, but it doesn't make any difference. I'm not myself, but that isn't my point. The point is that is a discriminatory phrasing that you should eliminate.
I take your point, but reject it.
Ned on the stack.
I'm sorry, who wants to be asked?
Ned. Ned.
All right, go ahead, Ned.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on the peace movement in Lafayette and in regards to the recent comment as far as the Jewish influence. It's somewhat of a paradox that the group will not discuss 9/11, however, they have openly sponsored, in contrary to the discussion, they've openly sponsored a number of speaking engagements pertaining to Israel and Palestine and brought people in like, what's his name? A number of activists that have spoken on behalf of Palestine. So I'm experiencing something of a paradox here. In my own community with regard to trying to bring 9/11 into the mainstream. And I've mentioned before even the Unitarian peace movement. I've got people that, well, I felt like I kind of got forced out of it simply because I wanted to discuss this issue and there were people there that didn't. So, one other comment. I was wondering how, what about the idea of approaching Janice? Would you think she'd be willing to speak to us on a teleconference and explain her experience with 9/11 Truth and and the transition?
Wow.
Good idea.
Man, that's a great suggestion. I wonder if she would, too. Does anybody still have contact with her?
I do.
You do, Ned?
I mean, I have her website. I mean, I have her email address.
Well, like, I'm wondering if it would be better for you to do it or if it would be better for us to ask James to ask her. What do you think?
Probably go through James with a nice suggestion.
Why don't we talk to James and see what his feeling is, because whether or not he's had, and go from that standpoint.
Okay.
Yeah, now Robin on the stack to respond.
Okay, Robin, go ahead, and I'd like to go behind you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. And regarding the conflict that you're having in Indiana there, let me give you several experiences that I have been involved in here in Seattle. There is a very strong movement called Stand With Us out here, which is a very, very intense effort by the Jewish American community to explain away Israel and to justify their behavior and whatever, a very typical response. And I've attended several of these events with my signs of 9/11 Truth and all of my handouts and whatever. They even brought a rabbi up who said, who was trying to make the point that he was pro-Palestinian, and there are several Jewish soldiers, IDF soldiers, who are now speaking out and whatever it might be. And I have some good friends up here who I can't identify to you who have been involved in the 9/11 Truth movement who have been in on, who know an awful lot about the relationship between Israel, American Jews, and Zionists in our society, and websites and stuff like that. And so we've sort of been watching this event unfold, and I attended this rabbi's speech about he's a Palestinian and all of this kind of stuff, and I brought my stuff in public place and was able to try to put it up, my signs and my handouts and whatever, and so I would put it up, and then I would go in and sit down and listen to it, and I'd go out and I'd just kind of check on the stuff, and it would all be taken down and all the stuff would be hidden. So I'd put it back up, and I'd go in and listen to a few more words of this guy who's just, to me, making a big sales job, and I would go back out, and they would have their, they would take my signs and my information and just simply put it right back down. So the bottom line of the story, in my view, is that there's a great effort not to talk about Palestine, as we all should know, in this country, because it is scrubbed, even from, quotes, liberal media. You never hear anything on MSNBC about Palestine. The only outfit that I hear anything about Israel-Palestine is on Democracy Now, where Amy, I think, just can't help but do it, okay? So I think this is a very real thing, and it doesn't happen without the support and knowledge of American Jewry and the Zionists and AIPAC and the structure that Israel has that has penetrated this country. And you can go along and you can think that Christopher Bolin is completely crazy out of his mind, but he is supported with evidence and facts and wildly throughout, I think, the world, unlike he is supported in this country, because we are talking about disinformed. We are being misinformed or underinformed all the time about Israel and Palestine. It is simply not the case with other news outlets around the world. So this is a very real issue that I don't think is that hard to deal with, just as long as we start to talk about it openly. And I have Muslim friends and I have Jewish friends, and I call them Jews and Muslims and Irish and black guys and whatever. So you got to talk about it as the way it is.
Okay, well, I wanted to pick up Paul's point that he made earlier, because I think it is something that we should be alert to. There is a very large overlap between Jews and Zionists, but it's not 100%, okay? It may seem sometimes like it's pretty doggone close, but it actually isn't. And because that's true, I think we do want to be careful in using the term Jew to imply that everybody of a particular background, ethnic background, is of a particular political orientation, because it really isn't the case. I know of exceptions to that rule. I know them very clearly. I can name you one Jew right now, although he's not a 9/11 advocate by any means. He is totally on the other side with respect to the Israel-Palestinian question, okay? Named Jeff Blankford. And I can think of others. I know of others. And I work closely with some of them. So I think we want to be careful, because the term Jew does have implications that are ethnic as well as religious. It's unfortunately ambiguous as a term. But because it's the case, we don't want to, I don't think, tend to overgeneralize when we're talking about a particular influence. I would be willing to bet you, Robin, that 99% of the time when you're using the word Jew, you could just as effectively use the word Zionist and be absolutely defensible in what you're saying.
But I usually do use the word Zionist, but in the street, Ken, people don't know that. The average person doesn't know AIPAC or Zionism, ADL.
Well, they need to be educated then.
Well, okay, so that's what I do.
But that's
what I do. And on this phone call, there is no need to use the word Zionist, because everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Well, but supposing that person you're talking to in the street happens to be Jewish.
Doesn't matter, then they'll know it, and I'll just say, well, what I really mean to say is the Zionists, the hardcore people in Israel who are like the people that we call our neocons in this country. That's how I handle that.
It's an interesting point to dialogue about, okay? I mean, really, how we language our objections to certain kinds of behavior. So I just thought, Paul's point was worth pursuing.
I agree. I do this a lot. I'm in the street an awful lot. I deal with an awful lot of people with very hot signs. A lot of them have the word Israel on it and the Greater Israel Project and all kinds of stuff like that. So I draw a lot of communications. I do this a lot. And I'm not going to be afraid to use the word Jew or Muslim or Irish or black or anybody else. It needs to be made... It has to be used enough so that it is not so presumptive. And it shouldn't have to be presumptive on this phone call, because there are too many people who know too much about it.
I think it runs a real big risk of overgeneralizing.
I never said that every Jew was a Zionist.
Yeah, well, when you say Jews this and Jews that, you are implying that. When you say Jews instead of Zionists.
I'm going to make the point that you're inferring it, and you're inferring it because people are so nervous about being called anti-Semitic if they happen to use that word. This is part of it. Talk to, read Norman Finkelstein.
Yeah, I've already been down that road, so that's not my issue. My issue is just political accuracy, that's all.
Well, okay, it's a difficult issue. Political correctness has a good side, and it has a bad side.
This is Ned.
Ned, go ahead.
Yeah. Is anybody familiar with Jewish Voice for Peace?
With what?
I am somewhat. That is the organization in Israel?
No. It's actually based in Oakland, California. I've had some contact with them. I've not had anybody come back and respond in reference to 9/11, but they are they're one of the few peace organizations that openly address the Palestinian question and advocate a two-party state, I believe it is. They have a website, and they talk about, right up front, they're talking about Israel-Palestine and working on a conciliation basis with Palestinians. Like I say, I've kind of thrown around 9/11 with a couple of the people that I've talked to within the organization, but I've not had any direct response in reference to 9/11.
Well, I have something to say about those organizations. I thought it was the organization that operates in Israel, where there's a small packet or a small community of peace activists who share what you just said. Okay, and then there was a guy named Blumenthal. I want to say Max, but I don't think that's what it was. He was on Democracy Now! a couple of 3 months ago, and he had written a book just relating what the heck is going on in Israel, what people are feeling and whatever, and he outed the fact that the peace group that most people are familiar with in Israel was funded by Israel.
No, I think it might be worth it. I'm sorry. It might be worth your time to take a look at this website, because these people are all activists within the United States that are attempting to bring attention to these issues.
What's the name again? Jewish?
Jewish Voice for Peace. And
Voices for Peace?
Mm-hmm. And they're located in Oakland, California.
So we'll make a note that it's not Zionist Voices for Peace.
No, on the contrary. I mean, they're fairly outspoken about I'm looking at their mission.
No, I got it. I'm aware. I mean, I've had tremendous conversations with Jewish American Jews in Seattle. Like, the guys at Progressive come right up to me. You know, I told you know, and some do share my concerns. And one guy who had a yarmulke on was just black and dressed, white shirt and very traditional beard and everything come up, and we had a good long conversation about 9/11. Of course, he knows. And I said, you know, the issue here is that if Red Meat America ever finds out that Israel is, you know, may have had a hand in the events on 9/11, I said they're really good, you know, there's going to be a huge amount. They're going to lose all their support. And he looked him in the eye and says, lose their support? That's got nothing to do with it. He says, they're going to lose the White House. I didn't make that up. Okay? I didn't make that up. This landed in my lap like it usually does. So I'm not going to, you know, run away from using the word Jew or Arab or Muslim or black or gay. I don't care. Speak the truth. We're a truth movement.
I think we've probably exhausted this topic for tonight. We have another item of discussion,
okay,
which is to feedback on the latest special teleconference, both in terms of the vehicle that we used uniquely, the Skype medium, and then just on the special teleconferences in general and where we want to go from here with them. So. It's open for discussion, whoever wants to give feedback.
Well, you can put Robin on the stack if you want.
Yeah, put Dwayne on the stack.
Robin to Dwayne?
Yeah.
I feel it was a terrific, despite the technological differences, and we probably can't do Skype again, unless we have to, but I just thought it was great. One of the better moments of this whole teleconference. And I'll just close by saying what Max told me, because I have got pages of issues that I will research and eventually sometime give to Max, because there has to be additions to that 5-DVD set. There has to be improvements on a bunch of the elements. But he's burned out, and I'm not giving it to him for a long time. He's basically said, I'm on vacay, guys. And so I think he's done a great job. It's a big step ahead, but by no means is it a final step. And I don't think he'll be insulted by it.
About the technical issues that we encountered, what you thought of, what those were?
The Skype thing was distorted voices.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, it worked, but everybody had to compensate.
Okay.
It'd be nice to figure out a way, another way.
Okay. And who else? Ned? Was it Ned or?
No, it's Dwayne.
Dwayne.
But you can put Ned on the stack at the tail end.
Okay. I wanted to say that I think we should treat the Skype technical problems as a separate issue. I think we need to find someone of our people who is more knowledgeable in Skype to see if there's something we were doing wrong. If it turns out you're always going to have that kind of distortion, well then I agree that we should not do that again. But I'm thinking that if we did things right, it would have been good. And it was convenient, I think. So we had to try to make it work. And the other thing is I think that it was so valuable because he had thought through in almost, let's say, 80% of our questions, he's already thought through the topic at great detail. And so it was like a wealth of information that he could just give us the benefit of his in-depth thinking. It was just tremendously valuable. It's very good. Over.
Okay. Ned, did you want to say something?
Yeah. My experience with the Skype and that teleconference, initially everything was coming in great. For the first few minutes, all the discussion was very clear, at least to my end, and then gradually it became distorted. So I guess the question is, maybe there's some information we could get from Skype organization as to what maybe created the distortion and why it continued the way it did. But as far as the information that was being presented, yeah, it was great. That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay. I definitely noticed the distortion too, although I was of the opposite impression. I thought things actually tend to get better toward the end, and there was less distortion. Or maybe I just got used to it. I don't know. the distortion is an issue, particularly, I guess, because he was calling from Italy, so that probably increases the odds that we're going to get some distortion along the way. However, with that particular conference, as we know, that was the only option. So I'm glad we had the experiment. It sounds like something we would want to reserve only for emergencies at this point, unless and until we find a way to overcome the technical the technical issues. I made an error, an operator error in the recording, so I only got the sum of it, the first 30 minutes, because I was actually recording through my own microphone rather than through the internal sound. But fortunately for us, Craig was also recording, but also Noise Radio was recording, and they had posted it on their website, which is really cool, and they got a nice clear recording of it. So that's what we're using for our archive this time. Let's see. I think unless somebody else has something to say, I think we should look at who else we might want to contact. I know that we were in the process of trying to get John McMurtry, and who was it? I think was it James that was going to contact him?
Seems to me. I thought it might have been Barry.
Maybe it was Barry. Yes, maybe it was Barry. Somebody was in the process of trying to get a hold of him, but other than he, and now we have Janice Matthews as somebody that we
And Kevin Ryan is a thought on the stack too, right?
Kevin Ryan's been an ongoing question, but apparently nobody has a contact with him.
Right. Listen, Ned, I have some information about Kevin.
Okay.
I mentioned this kind of an announcement early on before we were getting started, but we're participating in a panel discussion down at IUPUI Indianapolis a week from Monday with Kevin Ryan. He's agreed to participate. So it might be an opportunity to talk to him about maybe coming on board with the teleconference. So I'm hoping to be able to chat with him a little bit about that.
Uh-huh.
So cool. I'll follow up on that, maybe have a little more information for you here in a week or so.
Okay.
And this is Robin. I do have an interesting suggestion. Again, because I'm fascinated by this break between 9/11 Truth and the peace community, and I think San Diego is just doing such a wonderful, exemplary job of keeping the bridges there. But the most odd town in America that is not bridging 9/11 Truth and peace is San Francisco in the Bay Area. And there is one person who has sort of acted as a liaison in between the two groups. And I would be very curious as to her perceptions and information. It's Carol Brulé, and most of us probably know her name. And I don't know if I would like to invite you to have somebody just chat with her and see if she can come on with a specific question, at least asked, is why is there a gap between these two movements? It's San Francisco. There's just no way San Francisco shouldn't be marching down the street arm in arm, 9/11 Truth and Peace. There's just no way. But it is. They are separate.
Well,
and I've been there. Okay, I've been there. I've been there, talked to Carol, tried to have a rally with the peace community and 9/11 Truth, and there had to be distance between the two groups. It was marching. It was crazy.
I would think if Carol felt that she was in a position to speak to that question, it would certainly be worthwhile asking her if she would like to share some time with us in a guided discussion about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you like to approach her on that?
Yeah, I'll give that a try. I'm not sure I have her. I probably have her email somewhere here. Oh, I can get it. I know I can get it from my friend Ken Jenkins.
Yeah.
Who's another person who we might talk to. I mean, he's been on this teleconference.
Yeah, we've had
when we were doing what? When we were doing that the Mike Gravel thing. Okay, he led that. But Ken is doing such amazing work trying to get all of our video stuff synthesized into public, you know, TV capabilities and stuff like that.
Well, I think there's a lot of workers out there, but I think we want people that have either accomplished something in particular or are specifically in a position to inform us about something. I would suggest Ken, you kind of hold him in reserve for the time being, because he has already been on the call. We already know him. He already did a kind of a special teleconference one time on instructing people on video things. So
okay.
I think we would want to push that. Any other suggestions?
Susan Lindauer and Sabelle Edmonds, if we could do it.
Who was the second one?
Sabelle Edmonds.
Oh, Sabelle. Well, jeez. I'd give my IG to have Sabelle on, but I don't know that
we can break. Yeah, I.
Who knows? You never know.
Yeah.
I've had a nice conversation with Colleen Rowley before. She was very interested in why NORAD didn't, you know, why the FAA and NORAD didn't respond that day. And I think I disabused her of the incompetence theory rather quickly.
Does anybody have contact with Sabelle Edmonds?
I'm on her website. I have her email address, yeah.
I'm an occasional supporter of hers, a financial supporter. So, that could be mentioned, certainly, that there are financial supporters on the call. I definitely have a lot of respect for her. If you'd like to go ahead and maybe just approach her on it, I'd be very shocked if she could take the time with us, because I know that she's pretty involved with other kinds of things. But still, you never know, like Robin said. doesn't hurt to try. And well, somebody else mentioned somebody else that we didn't in passing here just a minute ago.
Colleen Rowley.
Oh.
No. Who's the other person?
Susan Lindauer.
Yeah, Lindauer. I was going to just say about her that she's already been on the call.
Oh, okay.
She came on the call very early on in her career as a 9/11 truth, well, if you want to call her a 9/11 truth activist, on this issue. But I think she felt because people weren't giving her as much credibility as she wanted, that she just sort of washed her hands of the call. Because she was coming on, you know, kind of like a couple of weeks in a row there, stating her case, and she was given quite a bit of opportunity to do it. I don't know how you all feel, but I have mixed opinions about Susan Lindauer even today. I just don't know what to make of her.
Well, this is Rob, and I sort of have the same thing. Again, I met her up here in Seattle a little bit and got a book and read that whole thing. Now, when you had her on before, had she completed her book?
No. She was
all
in
right,
her...
It's a pretty big difference between that, and also she was in Max's movie for a very short bit. The most polite thing I can say, it's so strange that one person did so much going over there. I kind of look at her as 9/11's Forrest Gump. It's like, you did that too? Holy cow, you know. So it's a real fascinating story, but I feel it's just something that we deserve to dig into more, and she deserves an opportunity to try to explain more. I'm very interested in how she knows about all of the delivery of the vans that were doing so much work at the World Trade Centers on the 2 weeks prior to 9/11. She's, to me, the only source that has ever come up with that. It's like, how did you know that?
I agree that that's the most important, most interesting thing that she's revealed. But the problem that I've continued to find with her and that others have mentioned too is that everything that she says seems to give left-hand support to the official story at the end of the day.
She definitely protects.
This is
yeah.
Dwayne on the stack.
Okay. Go ahead, Rob. Then Dwayne.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
Okay. She was at the Vancouver hearings, and I thought she explained herself reasonably well in why it appeared like she was supportive of the official story. She basically says she doesn't, she believes that she was part of some fabrication of evidence, that there were certain things going on that supported the official story, and she turned out to be part of that. But that doesn't mean she believes that they had any role in actually the event. And so she does not subscribe to the official story, but she's describing what she ended up being involved with. Okay, I thought she did a reasonable job of explaining why she kind of had the take on it that she did. But I run into so many people that just didn't buy that. They just discounted what she said, and then they were very suspicious of her. And I just...
Do you personally, Ned, buy her story about negotiating directly with Saddam Hussein?
Do I buy it?
Yeah.
I don't have any reason to disagree with it. That doesn't, to me, that doesn't play into the official story.
Well, it's just a question of her overall credibility. I mean, it's a claim that she makes that she was directly negotiating with Saddam Hussein, right?
Well, it was indirect. It was a message that came from him. I don't know that she was actually talking to him directly or whether it was...
Yeah. I believe she said that she... Well, I could be wrong about this, but that my understanding was that she very clearly said that she was set to talk, she was supposed to negotiate with them to do this or that prior to the Gulf War.
It was made quite clear in the book, I thought.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I buy her story that she was the back channel, and whether it was Hussein talking to her directly or whether it was the message that he wanted to send directly back to the United States, which is the way I interpreted it, it was his message to go back to the United States, and she was the channel. So I don't see any reason to question that.
Because, well, I had a different impression that she was given a mission to negotiate something with him. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
So this is Robin. I think I'm next. I think my overall point regarding her is, number one, I wish I had been up to Vancouver to hear that, her presentation and questions up there, too. I just saw her in Seattle here, chatted with her a bit. And but I just think these are the avenues and the questions that we would be helpful for to keep the discussion alive, because clearly it's the book, Extreme Prejudice, it definitely makes one scratch their head in some ways. And so I think the more we know, the better off it is. I want to know about the Vans, man. How does she know that? So.
Yeah. Well, I should remind everybody that when she was on the call, that she was given quite a number of these types of questions, and I think she felt they were off-putting, okay? That's why I'm concerned.
But she's got a book out now, and everything is in print.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you can't do that without expecting some form of controversy or questions coming back or follow-up questions.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I'm suggesting that she probably has a negative impression of the teleconference based on her previous experience
right.
with it, but that's just my thought. So maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Maybe she wants to, you know, well, now that she's got the book out, she can say, well, have you read it? Da, 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 and then kind of go from there and elevate everything, which might be how you make how we make the pitch to her.
Who here has read her book?
I've read it. This is Dwayne.
Okay,
I'm right, just about wrapped up, but I got one more chapter to go.
Okay.
This is Ned. I've attempted to communicate with her on a number of occasions and never received a response in reference to 9/11, so maybe there's something to that. Maybe she doesn't want to have anything to do with
something to think about.
This is a passing remark.
Sorry? Did somebody else want to speak? Well, I don't know where we're at with this. I guess if anybody would like to talk to her and see if she's interested, we could go from there.
Why don't we put it on the next teleconference, Ken, because it's so, I think it just demands a thought, allows us all to either read the book or finish it and go from there.
Yeah.
Clearly
okay,
it's controversial.
All right, we'll table that one then. Okay. So any other suggestions before we leave the subject? Okay. So what time is it? It's almost time to wrap up here. Does anybody have any announcements?
Robin here. I just kind of want to make a statement for the record on the thing here. That's all right? Should
go
I go?
Ahead,
yes. In our teleconference with Max, I work fairly closely with Barbara, and she mentioned, the dear friends, and I think we're probably fair friends. But I really want to make it clear that I do support her research, and I'm glad that she has a working hypothesis, and she knows that this is the case. I do not support her conclusions on the white exploding airplane theory, but I'm glad that she's collecting evidence on that. I'm much closer aligned to where I think where Dwayne has finally settled, and that I suspect that there was an air vehicle that did strike that building. Not that anybody cares, but I just want to put that on the record to sort of air out what Barbara painted
up. This is Dwayne. If I can just add to that, when Barbara made the flat statement on the call with Moss, that she made the flat statement that no plane hit the Pentagon. I mean, I immediately felt that I needed to challenge that statement. But on the other hand, that wasn't why we were on that telecon, so I didn't speak up. But I don't like to hear people make flat statements like that.
Yeah, well, I would say I appreciate your deference there, because that really wasn't the purpose of that one. We didn't want to get sidetracked into side debate. But I think everybody has their own opinions about that question anyway. You are probably not the only one who had reservations, so I appreciate your comments. But I have personally asked Barbara on a couple of occasions to please send me the documentation for her basic claim about that white plane, which is this eyewitness who claims to have dodged it, the firefighter. And she's still not sent me that information. You know, I really would like to see the documentary proof of that, because it her claim pretty much stands or falls on that. Does anybody else know where that information might be had on the internet?
Nope, I don't. And this is Robin. The reason that I wanted to wait to this teleconference to make my point was that Barbara had reached out and identified me sort of as a collaborator with her, and I paid the same respect that Dwayne just expressed and did not want to say anything at that time on that teleconference, because that was Max's deal, and I know where Max stands, it's obvious. And anyway, but I did want to use this teleconference to make people understand that I appreciate a lot of her research, most notably the witnesses and the deaths, dead people in the A-ring and smell of cordite and early explosions, even though April Gallup has been undermined as a credible witness. But a lot of the other stuff doesn't fit for me.
This is Ned.
You say it doesn't fit? You say it doesn't fit, Robert?
It does not fit for me, no. The white plane stuff doesn't fit. Although there are definitely white planes flying all over Washington, D.C. that morning. Make no mistake, I'm just not sure one was blew up at the edge of the Pentagon.
Just Ned.
Yes?
Yeah, I was rewatching the 9/11 in the academic community. It is a very documentary today. And there is a Rumsfeld quote that's in this documentary that's stated, where Rumsfeld actually mentions a missile in conjunction with the Pentagon.
Yep.
That was the only time it was stated or appeared, and that somebody was able to grab it, and then, like I say, it was posted and used in this documentary.
Well, there's other eyewitness and ear witness testimony at and near the Pentagon that there was a sound. I believe it sounded like a missile. So, it's this wasn't fabricated out of nothing.
Okay. Any other announcements? Okay. Hearing none, then I think we should probably draw it to a close for tonight. We're about at the end of our time. I do appreciate you guys showing up tonight. I didn't expect a very big turnout since we had the other special teleconference so recently, but thank you all for showing up. And
thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
Again, last Wednesday of February. See you then. Good night.
Night, Ken.
See you later.